Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday afternoon. ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we always enjoy our conversations with our next guest. We've talked to her for years when she was at ESPN, now NASCAR on Fox. Jamie Little is on the line with us, and she was there and a part of the broadcast team yesterday as Talladega, who got rained out, postponed on Sunday, picked things up yesterday afternoon. Jamie, it was quite the scene before the race, and I got to know, when did you get wind that this was going to take place? Because Twitter was blowing up, and when you always hear about things going viral, that was a scene that went viral yesterday.
Absolutely, yes. Thanks for having me on. It was quite a day, I mean, from start to finish. But, you know, the day started off early morning just learning everything that had happened overnight, the news that got out about what happened in Bubba's garage stall. And then as I was walking around the garage, just kind of, you know, getting more information, but also doing my job for the day, and that's talking to crew chiefs and getting updates for the day, that's when I started to learn. I was talking to one of the Hendrick crew chiefs, and he said, we were talking about, you know, what was happening, and he said, well, Jimmy's, you know, looking to do something with Bubba. He wants to stand by him for the national anthem. And I said, that's amazing. He goes, yeah, and I guess now all the drivers want to, and Jimmy's encouraging all the crew members. Well, then Kevin Harvick took it a step further and said, why don't we push his car down to the front of the grid? So it all started coming around. It started on the driver text chat. That's kind of how everything gets started, really, now in the sport. They all kind of talk together. And I don't know if that was the night before, like after the news had come out, or if it was early morning yesterday. But it was together between Kevin Harvick and Jimmy Johnson. They came up with that idea, and NASCAR was all for it. NASCAR on Fox, we jumped on and said, absolutely. And it was just one of those moments that you couldn't have scripted it any better. I mean, it was a moment I'll never forget, and it was just a moment that I was really, really proud to say I'm part of the NASCAR team.
It was powerful. It was powerful to watch. And good on NASCAR. I mean, you've been involved in auto racing. I know you've done open wheel a lot at the beginning of your career, and now, you know, stock cars, and NASCAR's had an image, and there's been a lot of things that we're discussing today, Jamie, that, you know, has been discussed for years, but just it was just not, I guess, the right time to change. NASCAR has turned a real corner, and I think they're benefiting from this. And like I said, that scene yesterday was powerful, the Confederate flag and what's happened there, and certainly Bubba Wallace being pushed to the forefront of all this. What has it been like to be in the middle of all this right now with your coverage and Fox and the sport? I mean, you guys have benefited with ratings. I think you're getting new eyeballs on the sport. We're watching things grow. What has that been like?
It's like a roller coaster. I mean, like you said, I've been covering it for so long, and it's like, when you cover IndyCar, you cover NASCAR, it's like, okay, this is what we've been doing for all these years, and it's just what we do. You know, the Confederate flag flies at certain racetracks. You'll see it more than others, like Talladega or Darlington. And, you know, as a West Coaster, first time I ever saw a Confederate flag in person, I was like, oh, my gosh, that's so crazy that they fly those here. But it's a Southern thing, and that's kind of how I think a lot of people looked at it. But if you're not someone of color, you don't see the other side of what that flag means. And to your point about, like, these are topics that have been talked about for a long time, I think it has a lot to do. This change has a lot to do with who's in charge now. And
yeah,
not to take anything away from anybody who's been at the top of NASCAR, but people now are listening. And they made a statement in Atlanta, and Steve Phelps said, this is a moment of listening. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're listening to the drivers. They're listening to Bubba. They're listening to what is the right thing to do, to embrace everyone, to welcome everybody into the sport, and realizing there's probably a lot of people out there that felt like NASCAR wasn't for them because they weren't welcome. And they get that, and they're acting on it now.
I agree with you, by the way, 100%. Jamie Little on the line with us, NASCAR on Fox. I just told the story last hour, Jamie, that it was a couple of years ago, and I'm pretty sure, it's pretty sad that I can't remember definitively, but I'm pretty sure that he was still in the truck series, but was doing the Predators pregame show at Bridgestone Arena, and they were, NASCAR was in town, they were promoting Bristol, because Bristol was going to be the following weekend, and they brought Bubba Wallace to come on the pregame show with me, and it was the first time that I ever met him. To be totally honest, didn't know much about him. And after the interview, because I talked to him before the interview, during a break, I talked to him after the interview, during the break. And, you know, he left quite the impression on me. I knew Bubba Wallace after meeting him that day and spending a little bit of time with him. I think you have to be equipped to handle what he's done. And I'm not surprised by any of this because, you know, some people leave lasting impressions on you, some don't. And he did with me, and I'm not surprised that, you know, he's leaving quite the impression, and he's the guy that can handle, you know, this type of spotlight. So what have your dealings been like with him?
Absolutely. I've known Bubba, I don't know how many years now. I think I first met him when he came into the Xfinity series. And let's be honest, you're the only black driver in NASCAR. Imagine the things that you see and hear and are faced with, but you have no place to say what you really think or feel to anybody because they don't want to hear it because you're the only one, so nobody else can relate to that. That's what he's been harboring all this time. So when you see Bubba speak and his eyes well up and he starts crying right away, that to me is years and years of holding it inside. And now he finally feels at peace that he can talk about it. He can talk about his feelings and say, this isn't right, and I feel hatred at some of these places, not by everybody, by no means. He wouldn't still be in the sport if he felt like everybody was against him, and they certainly aren't. But I feel like he has felt these feelings, and I related to somebody that I worked with at ESPN for 7 years, Brad Doherty, a 7-foot black man. You don't see that anywhere else in NASCAR, but he was a NASCAR analyst. We worked together for 8 years, and he would tell me some of the stories when he would go into the infield, the things that were said to him and done. Oh my gosh. I mean, I can't even imagine that as, you know, being a white woman or a white male. We would never hear those things at a racetrack or any sporting event for that matter. So to hear him come out, be as strong as he is, because you know with him being as outspoken as he is, there's hate right back. He's getting pushed back. All of us are getting it on social media because we're standing with Bubba. I just think it's great what he's doing, that he's standing as strong as he has because he loves this sport. He loves racing, and he belongs there. So he should feel comfortable being there, and same goes for the fans.
You know, I know, Jamie, over the years, Liz Allison and I would talk to you about being a female reporter in this sport, right? So you probably can relate to a lot of things, and you're right. We've had conversations with Brad Doherty, and it's still mind-blowing to know that the people like actually do that. But it's also mind-blowing, I said this yesterday on the show, it's mind-blowing to think in 2020 that we're talking about somebody, and I've been in those garage areas and those stalls, so I know the setup, I know what it's like, that somebody would hang a noose in that area. I believe they're going to find this person. I really do. I feel that in every ounce of fiber, every bone in my body feels that way, and I hope they do, and they are punished accordingly. But I can't believe we're actually having this discussion in 2020. Like,
yeah,
it's mind-blowing to me.
Me too. I mean, it's
and I know our society's not perfect, Jamie. I get it. We got a long ways to go, but gosh, I thought, you know, that to me took me back. And then, you know, you've got the Sonoma story out there as well. What was your reaction?
Yeah, I was shocked. I'm like, what? I haven't even heard the word noose. And I
right.
don't know how long. It's like, what are they talking about? What happened? And, you know, what I can say is what that person did didn't take very long because they used the rope that's in every single garage stall to use to close the garage doors. So it didn't take long for somebody to just wrap it up and make it look like a noose. It wasn't like somebody had to go in there, take it, hang it, and they needed, like, time and make sure nobody sees them. It was something that was done quickly. And I really hope it's nobody carrying a hard card. I hope that it was somebody, an outsider, that was allowed inside the track for some reason for their job or whatever. I hope that they find him. But I think Bubba spoke loud and clear in my post-race interview about his feelings, that he didn't wear a mask and he was sorry, but he wanted everybody to see that what happened was not going to keep him from smiling.
That was very well done. Jamie Little is with us from Fox NASCAR and was on hand for the race. And, Jamie, you know, it almost wouldn't have mattered what happened in the race, but the race itself was an unbelievable finish as well. So you had maybe this spotlight on the sport where a lot of people, because of the Bubba Wallace thing, were tuning in that otherwise wouldn't have. And then they get to see the sport really at its best, where you get a race that literally comes down to the last fractions of a second.
Absolutely. And the whole race was good. I mean, I always say the Talladega is probably my favorite race to watch, to feel, to witness in person, because it makes your heart pound. I don't care how many times I see it that I'm covering it. My heart pounds, my hands sweat. It's just, it's intense. And like you said, you know, maybe we had a lot of new eyeballs watching, like, all right, who's this Bubba guy and what is this all about? These guys seem like they're pretty cool and like they're good people. Let's see what they do out there. You know, there's no other sports on, so let's take a look. And I think that we delivered. I think the racing was incredible. The finish was incredible. You had wrecks. You had close finishing. You know, you had everything that, that people hope for. And then at the end, just, you know, we wanted to get Bubba and didn't know if he'd want to talk at all. And he graciously said yes. And then this whole thing developed and we followed him and he had fans in the stands that drove in from Atlanta and they were there to support him because they heard of him. They read about him. They heard about him on the news and watched this story unfold. And it was like, oh my gosh, like these storylines are things I've never covered in sports before. So it goes beyond racing, I guess is the best way to put it.
And I think you have to really like how he handled himself. As Darren pointed out, you could kind of see it. If you've known him for a long time, you're not surprised. But for a lot of people that maybe are seeing him in the spotlight for the first time, you know, I think of going back, you know, the Jackie Robinsons, how you have to have – it's the right person in the moment that can really make a big impact and carry this forward. So what's the next step, Jamie? Well, first let me ask you this before I get to that one. For those that maybe didn't even know much about Bubba Wallace before a week or two ago when all of this started to come up, tell us about where he sits, because I know he had the lead in the race with about four laps to go. He took a shot at it, came up a little bit short, ended up, I think, 14th, as happens sometimes when you run low on fuel and that kind of thing. But he's obviously a very talented racer. What's his future like in the sport?
Absolutely. I think he's showing, what is this, his third year in the Cup Series. He's showing what he's capable of. That team is now, I think he had two top tens in the last four or five races. He's finished top 15. And for some, they go, well, that's not a top five or that's not winning. But you have to look at the team he's with. Richard Petty Motorsports, it's an underfunded team. It's a single car operation. So to pull off top 15s is huge. And I think this just opens up the door. I've heard rumors of these sponsors that have reached out that want to align themselves with Bubba. I don't know what, you know, which ones will come to fruition, but some big, big companies. And that's what we need. And we mentioned Brad Doherty. I interviewed him last week because I have a show called Off Track that we run on all of our platforms for NASCAR and Fox. So I thought he'd be a perfect one to just talk about all topics as a team owner, a black man in NASCAR, a lover of Richard Petty, wore the number 43 as a Cleveland Cavalier. So, you know, I talked to him about all these different topics and he said, you know, I these boardrooms that I've been in, you can't imagine. The first thing that they say to me is that flag, that Confederate flag. And these things that are aligned with NASCAR, it just doesn't fit us. And we don't want to be aligned with that. He said, now that they've removed that and they're doing the things they are, watch out. All of these new companies can now open their eyes and hopefully their wallets to the sport of NASCAR. So I'm hoping that's what happens for Bubba and it trickles down to the sport as a whole. Bubba just needs to keep doing what he's doing. And I'm sure that win is in sights. He's proven he can win in the truck series. He's a heck of a racer. He belongs there for sure. And I hope it inspires more kids of color to, you know, coming up that want to race and not feel like, oh gosh, well, there aren't many of us out there. I don't want to do it. I hope that Bubba inspires them to say, heck yeah, just like I did for Danica. She inspired a whole generation of females that thought, I want to race. And actually, it is possible to get to the top level.
Well, I tell you, Jamie, you said something right there that is a great answer to the next question of what is the next step, and that is new sponsors, new people, things like that that can help elevate him and his team, everything. What about another long-range question? This will be my last one, is, you know, some sort of grassroots program by NASCAR to try to reach out to areas that, you know, maybe can find some of the next drivers who have the talent to do it but maybe haven't felt included or maybe haven't searched for, you know, things like that. There's a lot of people out there that have that kind of talent if NASCAR can find them.
Absolutely. They do have something that was actually started. Brad Doherty was the one with the idea behind it all. It's called the NASCAR Drive for Diversity Program. And every year they have a class. And it's the class of 2020 NASCAR Drive for Diversity. And they have the drivers. It's females. It's Mexican-born. It's black. It's whatever, whatever background. They are trying to shine a light on the next ones, the ones with the most talent that deserve a shot. And so it puts them in the spotlight. But they also do it for pit crews. And if you walk through the garage right now, there are more men of color going over the wall for these cars than I have ever seen. I mean, by a lot. It's amazing what they're doing. They're getting all these former football players that are tremendous athletes that didn't have anywhere to go when college was over. Maybe NFL didn't work out. They're on pit road now, and they're part of our family. And that's all because NASCAR's efforts for this diversity program to open up the eyes to people that, hey, there's jobs. There's good paying jobs and things that you can do as an athlete, and we'll hire you, whether you're a driver or you're a crew member.
Last thing, Jamie, I'm just curious from your perspective. Willie and I, 3 years ago here in Nashville, when the Predators were making their run to the Stanley Cup Final, you could feel like the groundswell of the fan base, the community, the city. It was just overtaking this town, and it became everybody was consumed with it. And I always wonder if you're in the middle of it. Sometimes it's harder to see what's going on around you. You're in the middle of all this. Can you feel like the groundswell right now for the sport? Like I know we talked about at the beginning, but I think it's just going to keep getting bigger because of what just happened yesterday. There's going to be more and more attention and eyeballs. And like you said, nothing's come back yet. These other sports are about to come back, hopefully, but nobody's really back yet other than golf, and the UFC has been doing along with NASCAR. Do you feel that groundswell right now, being in the middle of it?
I do. I feel like people are talking about it more than ever, and new people, new faces are tweeting about it and saying they're watching it and wanting to go to the races, or calling and asking questions. And, you know, I always gauge, like, if a race was really good or a storyline made national headlines, when those family members reach out to me or those friends that I went to high school with reach out to me. This is one of those moments, obviously. That's when you know that it's gaining some steam. Now, does it continue? I think this is one of those storylines that absolutely continues because Bubba's not going anywhere. And I think that this change in NASCAR is so big that it's going to have a trickle-down effect for so long, and that's what we needed. And I definitely, you know, something, you know, a race happens yesterday, and all of a sudden I'm getting texts during the race interview requests, and then my day-to-day I'm supposed to be camping with the family, but I'm talking about it all day, and I'm so happy to do that because it's a great moment that we need to capture. We need to share as much as we can about our sport and about the changes that are being made.
Well, we thank you for sharing your perspective today with us. It's always good to catch up with you. You and the family continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, you guys. I appreciate you having me on. Have a good day.
Keep up the good work. Jamie Little, NASCAR on Fox, and she's done a tremendous job with their coverage and was right in the middle of everything over the weekend and yesterday at Talladega. We will come back. More on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Enjoyed the conversation there with Jamie Little, NASCAR on Fox. Peter Burns, SEC Network, coming up at 1 o'clock. We'll get into a lot of good things with him on the SEC front. In fact, I heard him just recently do a really good interview with Commissioner Greg Sankey, and he talked about the flag and the state flag for Mississippi, and there's a lot of things that have come out on that front we're going to get into with him. And so looking forward to Peter Burns coming up at 1 o'clock. You can stream us from anywhere. Yeah, download the Game Nashville app. That's free and easy. You can also enable Alexa Skill or Google Home and ask it to play 102.5 The Game, or you can live stream from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. So all easy and available options for you, and they're really good options if you would like to listen to the show. Willie, I really enjoyed that interview with Jamie Little. She's always good, but very thoughtful, and I thought she shed a really good light on some of the things we've been talking about.
Yes, always great to catch up with her, and you know, she was right in the middle of it yesterday, as you know, for those that maybe don't follow the sport. I mean, she was the one right there conducting the interview with Bubba Wallace after it was over, and it was not a race that he won, right? Typically, that's for the winner, but under the circumstances, that's who everybody wanted to hear from, and it was a very good interview. And that line, you know, you're not going to take away my smile. That's going to be that you're going to carry that. That's going to be carried on. That's a good sound bite that, you know, you put on a T-shirt or a bumper sticker, right? Because it's a continuing fight. You go on to the next place, you face more and more challenges. And so I root for this guy now. I saw our man, our buddy Stu Grimson, put this out. He goes, I've never watched a full lap of a race, but yeah. I watched yesterday. I was rooting for Bubba Wallace. So that, you know, that's the kind of thing you like to see.
I saw the same tweet. In fact, I even liked it. That was really interesting. They'll be off to Pocono this weekend for two races. So there's two cup races this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And yet again, this is another big opportunity for NASCAR to take over a weekend, right? They've got, you know, two cup races over the weekend. So they're going to knock out Pocono in one weekend. This is part of kind of trying to get as many races in as possible. And they will try to do that this weekend by doing two at Pocono. I saw where a couple Steelers players have tested positive. I saw where Mike Tomlin, I guess, put that out there, that a couple of Steelers players have tested positive. And this is what we were talking about yesterday. And a big-time tennis player testing positive as well. Djokovic, right? I mean, that was pretty big news.
Pretty big news, yeah. Novak Djokovic, I mean, it's the biggest name in the sport outside of Roger Federer, right? I mean, that's a huge name. That might be the biggest name in sports that has gotten it yet.
I think it's him and his wife, right? I think I saw it was him and his wife. Didn't they play an exhibition match? And I guess there really wasn't any social distancing, and maybe it was a doubles. I'm not sure the exact story behind it, but I think I remember reading that it was him and his wife that both tested positive. So, yeah, I mean, he's as big of a name as it gets in the tennis world, like you said, along with Roger Federer. But this is what we've been talking about, is how do you handle these – positive test, right? It's not if, it's when they happen. How do you handle this? And I know in tennis it's a little bit different than the team sports, but as these NFL teams are getting ready to get cranked up with training camps and what have you, how are they going to handle when players come in and they start testing positive, or in the middle of the preseason, or if it's, you know, sometime in the regular season? How are teams in the league going to handle positive test?
You know, and I would think that in most cases, and, you know, you knock on wood, that the person is going to have to, you know, sit out for a while and then eventually come back. And in a lot of cases, if not the vast majority, healthy people, great athletes are going to get through it okay. A lot of times, maybe even symptom-free. Or very mild symptoms. And so that's the one thing. It's the key is to not allow that person to spread it to several others, right, on your own team or, you know, in a locker room, all of that stuff. Those are the big concerns that everybody's trying to tackle. And it is not an easy question.
No, it is not. I also saw where it looks like there's going to be a little bit of an ownership shift with the Detroit Lions. We talked about the Detroit Lions yesterday at the end of the show, and with Doug Clawson, that Martha Firestone Ford, who's 94 years of age, is stepping down. Sheila Ford Hamp will take over as the new owner for the Detroit Lions. And they've been showing Martha Firestone Ford, who's, you know, there at the games and 94 years old, sitting in the box, but looks like they're going to have a little bit of shift in the power running the Lions organization. Of course, the Ford family still involved, though, as well. So those are some of the things that are out there on the NFL front. I heard Chase and Floyd Reese have Joe Corey on yesterday, a former agent who we've talked to over the years, who does a really good job kind of weighing in on the Derrick Henry situation. And then Dak Prescott, who, as we know, signed the tender for, what, $31.4 million. And how everybody feels about that and what does that mean for Derrick Henry, who's already signed that tender, but can they get a deal worked out in the next – by the way, that's not that far along. Let's see, what are they
–
3 weeks away? 3 weeks, right?
Yeah.
From that deadline?
It'll be here before you know it.
And I do wonder how that's going to play out. Has anything changed in your mind on that front?
I don't know that anything is going to change until July 15th, right? It's just they're gonna go with what they go. I mean, I guess because there's a deadline, maybe there's negotiating in the last 48 hours. But until then, I wouldn't look for anything to change, would you?
Well, no, probably not at this point. I'm just wondering, do you think it's actually going to happen, or do you think that a new deal is going to get struck, or do you think that he's just going to play on that one-year tender?
Man.
We're making over, $10 million?
Well, it goes back to something we discussed in the first hour, right after we talked to Michael Russo. The smart agent, the smart player, is going to look into the crystal ball, and it's hard, right? But you got to ask yourself, what is the market going to look like in the next 2 or 3 years? You can sit there and say, well, we'll find a way to get the fans in. We'll find a way to have a vaccine, and everything's going to be okay. And you could go that way. But is there something to be said for getting the security, maybe taking a little bit less, but you have the security for the unknown for the next season or two? The NFL is a powerhouse in terms of financial, right? They, as long as they find a way to play the games, even if there's no fans in the stands, they're going to bring in a lot of revenue. But it is going to affect them if they can't have full stadiums, right? So what does that do if you play for 1 year on the franchise tag, right? What happens next year? Is that a good year to be in that same position again? Now, maybe they just franchise them again, right? That could happen, just like Dak Prescott is thinking about. But there's a lot of unknowns there, on top of the usual unknowns of a running back, right? Where one injury can send your career completely in a different direction, and you're never as valuable as he is today. So a lot to think about there.
Unfortunately, he signed that. Didn't he sign it right before everything hit?
I think he signed it right after he hit. Right after it hit. I mean,
really?
The day he signed it, we were doing our show. Oh, yeah, we were doing our shows from home when he signed
Where
the
were
tender.
We? Okay.
It was late March, early April.
I think it was
late March when it happened, if I had to guess, but because I think we were all surprised that he signed it. But I think that it's going to have to be a real tough conversation. It's complex no matter what, but when you throw all this on top of it, I think that's a great challenge for any agent, is to say, realistically, what is the market going to look like in any sport over the next 2 or 3 years because of what we're going through?
Mm-hmm. Here's a little bit of what Joe Corey said yesterday on the afternoon show.
Yeah, I would time it up with when you can get out of Ryan Tannehill's contract, which is essentially a 3-year deal. The first 2 years are fully guaranteed at signing, but the third year is fully guaranteed next March. So Tannehill's basically there for 3 years. So I would make the commitment where Henry is there for 3, and after that, you can get out of it with minimal cap consequences. You are right about the fact that he's got more life left or longer shelf life because of the lack of usage early on. I remember he complained about having the split time with DeMarco Murray, and at the time I'm like, you're going to be very thankful for that down the road because they won't be able to use that against you should you become the player that he actually has become. My only concern is he's a very physical runner, and that style is not most conducive to longevity. But to me, Tennessee really doesn't have any reason to pay him more than $12.5 a year. I'll say that from the standpoint that his franchise tag is shade under $10.3 next year. You do it again. It's a 12 and some change. And then you could put a transition tag on him the third year for another 20% increase, and that's about 14.8. And if you add those 3 years together, you're just under $37.5 million. And I'd say you guarantee the first 2 years and go from there. I don't think he gets to where Chris Johnson was when Chris Johnson signed in 2011, which averaged almost $13.5 million a year. And that may be one of the reasons you hesitate, because Vin Marino, the cap guy, was there when that deal was done. Nobody else was. But you basically paid Chris Johnson almost $29 million for 1 new year over the years he had from his rookie contract. So, yeah, Derrick Henry's your guy. He's the most important offensive player, but I'm not getting anywhere near Chris McCaffrey money for him.
There you go. I don't know. So he's basically saying to line it up with Ryan Tannehill, which, you know, I don't think anybody was really thinking. He may have more tread on the tire. He may, you know, have more use than a typical guy who's, you know, been around the league that long. But, you know, we know he was splitting time early on in his career. His attempts and numbers were way down. But I don't think anybody really out there is, even the biggest diehard Derrick Henry fans, and even if you know the importance of him to this franchise, would think more than 3 years, right? I mean, who's really thinking right. More than 3 years with a running back?
3 years is the right window. It's got to be. You'd be crazy to go longer than that.
Yeah. So I can't imagine anybody out there thinking that, you know, how could you not give him a longer deal than that? That's pretty much, I think, in par with everything. And then that kind of lines up with, this is basically what he's saying, at least this is the way I'm taking it. It sounds like he's going, this is the Titans window, right? You got a 3-year window.
Yeah, no question. There's a lot of logic there. I think Joel always does a very good job with details there. I like how he sort of came up with a ballpark figure. You take what's the franchise tag worth this year, what is it worth next year, what's a transition tag. You look at those 3 years and you come up with a ballpark of the number you want to be comfortable with. And if you can get it done, you have the security of knowing that it's done, right? It's not a year-to-year, well, what happens? The Albert Haynesworth, right? Oh, we're going to do this again next year. We're going to go through all this again. That's where it really becomes a burden, a distraction, I think, that could take away from a guy's effectiveness. I'd be willing to roll the dice for 3 years for sure and match it up with Tannehill. We'll see if they can come up with a deal. I'm somewhat optimistic that they can get it done. But I don't think it's going to happen until right before July 15th, right? I think it's going to go right down to the wire.
We had Teron Davenport on the show yesterday, and he put something out on ESPN.com about the Titans division, the AFC South, the all-decade honors, best player on each team, every position. We'll see what he's talking about to close up shop in hour number three of Darren Donick and Chase, next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So the four NFL Nation reporters for ESPN.com that cover the AFC South got together and put together their all-decade team, the best player on each team in the AFC South. So when you look at the Texans, this is no surprise. Like, this is a no-brainer, right? It's J.J. Watt. Easy. Honorable mention, DeAndre Hopkins, the guy that they traded away to the Cardinals. Deshaun Watson would be in there, but, I mean, he hasn't been there very long. So just time served kept Deshaun Watson. In the end, he'll probably take over the next decade. They do it. It's going to be Deshaun Watson, because he's going to get paid and he's going to be around a while. But no surprise about J.J. Watt for the Texans. Honorable mention, DeAndre Hopkins. The same holds true for the Indianapolis Colts. You say, well, who's best player of the decade? It's Andrew Luck. Honorable mention, T.Y. Hilton, which, that's good. I don't know how you feel about T.Y. Hilton. I think there's a considerable gap between Luck and Hilton. So, once again, no real surprises. The Jags, they decided just to pass. They just decided nobody was worthy in Jacksonville to be on a all-time list of anything, so they just decided to pass. No, that's not true. Calais Campbell won that category. Honorable mention, this is interesting, Maurice Jones-Drew, which was just like the first 3 years of the decade. So I think he played there in 06 through 2013. But he is second in all-time rushing in franchise history. Then we get to Teron, TD bringing up the Titans. So have you looked at this, Willie? Do you know who...
Yeah, I've looked at the whole thing. I think it's interesting not only who Teron selected specifically for the Titans, but when you look at the all-decade team in the AFC South, I think it's interesting to look at that, how they voted and how they came up with that team. And you ask yourself, how good is that team? Because there's a few people on that team I'm saying, really? That's your best guy at that position for the entire decade?
Mm-hmm. Like, whose comes to mind? Like, did you?
Finish what you said. Okay. You've got Delanie Walker as the best player of the decade. That's what Teron went with. Best player of the decade for the Titans.
Can you really argue with that? I'd say no.
I can't. But it just shows you it's not a great decade for the Titans.
I'm sure it's
not a decade full of
around the country were like, really? But Delanie Walker wins for the Titans. Honorable mention. Terrell Casey, who they traded to the Broncos. So I think
it's a pretty decent debate you could have of who's the best player of the decade. Is it Delanie Walker or is it Terrell Casey?
I think that's fair. I would probably still lean toward Delanie Walker.
Casey was there a little bit longer.
Yep.
For two more seasons. Delanie Walker's last two seasons were marred with injuries.
Yep.
So I think I might make the case for Casey.
Okay. I don't think you'll get a ton of pushback. I would say it's pretty darn close. I mean, it's a razor's edge of who, in my mind, it's 1 and 1A. But if you had to pick one, which you do, I'd probably go with Delanie Walker. But I could certainly see you making the strong case for Jarrell Casey. I really do.
I'm also trying to think of anybody else that even would come to mind for best Titans of the decade. There's just not a whole lot that you could say. I think Wesley Woodyard has been pretty solid for a long time. I think how much do you emphasize this new crop of guys that have come on the last 2 or 3 years that didn't play for most of the decade, but talent wise it blows away most of the decade. You got some 3 and 13s in there, right? You got some lean teams in that decade. Like even Derrick Henry has got to be strongly considered just what he did in the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's still, I mean, that kind of goes under the body of work, and it's like, you know, it's like Deshaun Watson's going to be there, but, you know, it's probably still a little early, even though I don't know if he's got any stronger case than Derrick Henry, but I just think it's just because of the time, the short amount of time for the decade.
Well, Kevin Byard made the all-decade team of the division, which may or may not surprise you. You know who else made it? It was Michael Griffin. They were the safeties on the all-decade team. Mark Mariani made the all-decade team as the return specialist, which is pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it has to do with who were the strong players for the other teams in the division. So you might have sort of a You might not be overly impressed with one guy at one position, but in comparison to the other candidates, he just jumped in there. How about Jack Conklin as an all-decade tackle and not
Luan.
Not Trevor Luan. Not Taylor Luan.
That is
Would you agree with that?
No.
I mean, Conklin was nice, but he missed the, you know, he had 1 year where he just didn't, he wasn't effective at all.
No, I would not. By the way,
certainly
Ben Jones.
Juwan has played longer. Well, Jones, remember, split the time. He played
all decade with two teams.
All
decade.
So that makes sense. You know, years of service there and playing consistently for that long. I can see that for sure.
How about Quentin Nelson making the all decade team? What has he got? 2 years? Two seasons?
Two seasons.
Jeez. And he's the all decade guard in the AFC South.
Yeah, the fact that something is up here with the Texans having three guys on the offensive line, I've never thought of them as a team that had a good offensive line. But they've got three guys on the all-decade team.
Yeah. But as you mentioned, it is interesting to see both safeties for the decade being Titans safeties, and Kevin Byard, present, and former Michael Griffin, who we just had on the show, what was that, last week? We just had him on recently.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, Mark Mariani as the kick return, punt return specialist. Adam Vinatieri was the kicker. Shane Leckler was the punter for the Texans. And the coach of the decade was Bill O'Brien.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Bill O'Brien.
I wonder if Chase is listening. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? He was voted as the all-decade coach, honorable mention, Chuck Pagano with the
Chuck
Colts.
Chuck Pagano, I guess, has got to be there, but I cannot disagree with O'Brien. Can you?
Well, it's what we've been saying before. I mean, Who else has got four division titles in the decade? Answer, nobody.
I noticed Ken Whisenhunt was not on the honorable mention.
I looked for him, and I didn't see him appear anywhere. In fact, I don't even think they have him mentioned as somebody who was in the AFC South.
So just to run it down quick, Andrew Luck is the quarterback. I don't think we have any beef there,
Nope. Right?
Arian Foster is the running back. And, you know, you think this shows you how quick top-level running backs come and go. But, you know, he was there, obviously, in the decade before. He's there 2009. So you have to look at 2010 to 15. But I haven't compared his numbers to anybody else's. But I guess, I mean, who else? Like, I mean, obviously, Derrick Henry the last 2 years has made a good charge. I think Foster at his best had a couple of really good seasons, right?
Yes, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. And this is post-CJ. For the Titans.
Yes.
Right? He was there at the beginning of the decade, but he was on a decline, right? What was his last year? 2010, maybe, with the Titans? Maybe 2011?
Maybe 2011. So he wouldn't qualify for the, you know, for the decade
Definitely
we're
not.
Talking about.
His best years
and
were
And his best years
09.
Were, right. His best years were in the previous decade. Andre Johnson, no problem with that. And DeAndre Hopkins. And
but even this, Andre Johnson, this was not his best decade, right? The previous decade would have been by far his best years, but he still got enough to start. DeAndre Hopkins, no doubt. T.Y. Hilton, no doubt. They go with three wide receivers and only one running back. I don't know what's up with that. You're saying there was not a running back that was better than Andre Johnson in the second decade of his career? I don't know. I mean, Andre Johnson, Titans 2016, that was a wash. Very little happened there of good. He might have had one or two great moments. The Colts 2015, I don't think that was a huge season for him. And then his last few years with the Texans, that wasn't his best, right?
No.
He was still really good at the beginning of the decade. But that's an interesting choice.
The two corners, Jalen Ramsey and Jonathan Joseph. About that.
Now of the Titans, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Jadeveon Clowney makes the all-decade defensive team.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I would not have thought.
Really?
Robert Mathis is a no-brainer.
Robert Calais Mathis
Campbell,
is a no-brainer. Yeah.
Calais Campbell hasn't been there very long, but
I mean,
a dominant
Darius
player
Leonard,
for sure.
I mean, he hasn't been there that long.
Yeah. So why those guys and not somebody like Derrick Henry as a second running back? Curious.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But it doesn't jump out at you as a star-studded decade for any of the four teams. Other, you know, you get past Luck and J.J. Watt and, you know, the latter version of Andre Johnson. It's not a whole lot of superstars there. DeAndre Hopkins for sure, but a little thin, right? But
does that really surprise you, Willie? I mean, think about this decade we're talking about. The Titans had two seasons. You know, they had, I take that back. I shouldn't say that because even the two non-playoffs were 9-7. But before that, before the 9-7s came, it was a whole lot of losing, right? A whole lot of losing. The Jags are the Jags. You basically exclude two seasons, and their decade is marred with a lot of losing.
A lot of losing.
The Colts, you know, they either are really good or they're really bad. There's, like, no in-between. And the Texans have been the most consistent franchise of the decade. But other than that, it's not like it's been murderer's row in the AFC South. That's what's been frustrating here, right? It's like, golly, it's not like you sit there and you look at the division. Like, the division just keeps – it's always, you always feel like it's there for the taking. And
right.
Unfortunately, I think that's the case again this year for the Titans, but – you know, they spent most of the decade not being very good. So I guess we shouldn't be terribly surprised, even though they got a lot of players that made this list, or at least some that are now.
That was
the
number
well.
One thing that jumped out at me, what you just said, is this division has been – it's not like they've been in this juggernaut division for the last several years. It's time to have some success. I'm hoping that time is now. You know, as they've built, I'm confident that they have a really good team now. It's as good as it's been, I think, for a long time. It took time to get there. But, man, you look back, it's just too bad. They dipped so low. Because you're talking about – there were a couple years in there. Like, that would be an interesting thing. Who – start ranking the worst seasons in the division by these teams. All four could have some teams, less the Colts, I guess. You know, they for the most part, they've been, I guess, most of the most consistent. But, man, the Titans, the Jags, and the Texans have all had some awful years in there, especially in some years where the Texans quarterback got hurt. So probably them less so. But there's been some bad years by those teams.
Well, if you want to get Ken Whisenhunt on this list, that would bring that category up. Then he makes an appearance for sure. Chase,
the Jags have some candidates.
Oh, no doubt. Like I said, Jags just being the Jags. Take away about two seasons, and for the most part, the rest of them was just a bunch of threes and four-win seasons. Chase said that he was listening, or is listening, and there, he has an eye roll on the Bill O'Brien. Still no comment on him with that. Interesting. All right, we'll come back. Peter Burns has always got an opinion on everything with SEC Network. We're going to start the fourth and final hour with Peter Burns next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.